Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Deanne Penn at United Nations Headquarters in New York. Coming up in this week's program, the UN calls for robust funding to end violence against women and girls, and promoting gender equality must not be devoid of local culture and religion. But first, HIV-positive women face more discrimination than men with HIV, according to a young activist from India. Lal Swanzali was at the UN to talk about the problems facing young people with HIV, especially in accessing vital services. She represents Youth Lead, an NGO which works with people up to the age of 27 who are considered to be at high risk of catching the virus. She's been talking to Daniel Dickinson.
Women living with HIV, it's really hard more than men. Because we have a lot of discrimination more than men. We have a lot of difficulties in assessing the health sectors also, health treatment also. We have a lot of problems there.
Why is there more discrimination?
Because of the gender inequality. Like the woman, as a young woman, when people are noticed we are HIV positive, they ask me that, where do I get HIV? But mostly men, they don't ask that question. And they treat me like that I'm really, really sexual active. That's why I become HIV. That's the question. And they are treat me and judge me like that.
It must be terrible to live with that sort of discrimination and stigma.
Yes, sometimes I try to commit suicide too. And sometimes I feel, when at the first I know my status, I'm really depressed and shocked. Because when my husband is know I'm HIV positive, he's kicked me out from the house, and then it's very, very difficult life. And I'm really young, and I don't know about the HIV. I didn't get information when I was young, when I was youth, and it's really hard to handle by myself. But luckily, I got the support from my family. That's why I become activist in the youth level.
What did you say to your husband when he forced you out of your home?
When I know my HIV status, I told my husband, I feel like that I got HIV from him, because I don't know where did they got. And then, but he's reacting me like the, I'm flirting with another peoples. And then, yeah, it's really hard to accept our status. So I really understand why he is denying his status. But if I'm not getting married, I won't find out my status, because that below 18 years old, they have to take the parent consent in our country. But imagine that if you were need to test HIV, it's really hard for the young people. It's really hard to take a parent consent, because most of the parents are, they didn't aware about the sex education.
Robust funding is critical to ending violence against women and girls, the UN Agency for Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment, UN Women, has urged. The agency launched a global campaign led by civil society organizations under the name Orange the World. For 16 days until the 10th of December, a host of public events will draw attention to this pandemic that impacts 1 in 3 women worldwide. UN Women Deputy Executive Director Lakshmi Puri explained to Jocelyn Sambira why money matters in ending these gross human rights violations.
The message of our global campaign to mark the 16 days of activism to end violence against women is that we must recognize the huge human cost of violence, but also the cost to society, to communities, but also to the economy, and recognize that investment or commitment to invest in prevention, protection, prosecution of perpetrators and access to justice for victims and survivors, as well as universal access to critical service provision to them, is the best investment. So this year we are going to be saying, put your money into this cause.
Have you been able to relay this message, and what has been their reaction?
The fact that every second, every minute, you have women and girls being raped, assaulted, abused, acid attacked, so-called honor killed, there is no honor in that killing, forced into child marriage, female genital mutilation, trafficked and sexually exploited, and in contexts of conflict as refugees being subjected to extraordinary levels of violence. So this is unacceptable. And I think we have managed to raise awareness about this. And that's the first point. You know, the conscience revolution is the first point. And then from there, what do you do about it?
If you take stock of what has happened over the years and looking forward, what would you do differently this year?
This year, we are bringing out graphically the cost of violence. And we have been talking about the human cost, the social cost. But we haven't yet got through the message, because sometimes money speaks. If you tell people that in some countries violence against women is costing them as much as 5% of your GDP, it makes an impact on policymakers, but also on the public. This is why it is important to keep on giving the message of cost and an investment that will not only save you that cost or help you recoup, but also that will be a sustainable development multiplier, a benefit multiplier, which is what gender equality is recognized to be in Agenda 2030.
Promoting gender equality must consider local culture, religion, and realities in a particular country, even though at times the local realities may not comply to international human rights standards. That's according to Manjarul Kabir, UN Women's Senior Program Advisor and Global Lead on South-South and Triangular Cooperation, a broad framework of collaboration between countries in the Southern Hemisphere. The UN agency has engaged in promoting South-South cooperation across the organization's priority areas, from women's economic empowerment to ending violence against women. Andita Listiarini asked Mr. Kabir why this type of cooperation helps to advance gender equality.
We have seen different models promoted by different countries and agencies, including many in the UN, didn't work at the country level because the context matters, because the culture matters, and because the religion matters. So sometimes some of the development approach are not nuanced enough to fit into the specific category and the development challenges of countries. So therefore, if we try to shape the realities on the ground and look into the more into demand as opposed to supply-driven development agenda, South-South cooperation framework enables the countries to look at what worked with other countries, practical examples, practical lessons learned.
Most countries in South-South cooperation are developing countries where patriarchy is still very prevalent. How does UN Women overcome that challenge?
There are elements of culture and religion and civilization and the local practices which may not be in compliance with international human rights standard, which UN stands for, and a lot of the UN normative values we all support. And to promote gender equality, we of course have to robustly link with normative process, but not devoid of the local situation. I'll give you an example. If you want to develop a violence against women program in Afghanistan, you have to factor in the insecurity women face in addition to the local customs and local practices that might not be helpful for women. If you want to develop a violence against program in Fiji or in Papua New Guinea in Pacific, clearly you have to factor into the realities and the challenges and the climate resilience of the Pacific region. So while your intention is good and ending violence against women, if you develop a program in Afghanistan, that will be different than what you'll be developing in Pacific. Wherever core challenges remains the same, women are not better off, or sometimes they're facing more challenges in addressing violence against women.
You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Deanne Penn.